played them.
We are live on the Freedom Fiends. This is Mr. Michael Dean.
And this is Nima Vidati. It is Sunday, June 30th, and we've got a special show for you here today. We're going to be interviewing Mike Vandebo. I think that's it, right, Michael?
Yep, Mike Vandebo. And Mike Vandebo is a controversial figure. He's one of the granddaddies of the modern American militia movement. He's the founder of the 3% movement, who have been denounced by Bill Clinton on CNN. Which, you know, that's a good thing. I would like to be denounced by Bill Clinton on CNN, and he doesn't even know who I am, that Bill Clinton. So Mike Vandebo is also hated by the Southern Poverty Law Center. He's a friend of the Oath Keepers, and he and David Kadria broke the story on the Gunwalker scandal, Operation Fast and Furious. An LA Times reporter once called Mike the gray eminence of the militia movement. Are you on there, Mike?
I am, sir, yes.
Excellent, excellent. How are you doing today?
I'm having so much fun, I can barely contain myself.
You sound like it.
As a matter of fact, I haven't had this much fun since a hog ate my little brother and spit out the shoes.
What's happened?
Then you had to know my little brother.
Are you madder than a wet hen today about this government that's going on? But so I used to be a lazy Democrat until I woke up, and you actually used to be a communist. How did that change, and how do you describe your political outlook now?
Well, I was extremely fortunate in that one day I was working my job at University Hospital in Columbus, Ohio, and it was right after the bicentennial. It was the Christmas of 1976. And I encountered a German doctor, ex-Wehrmacht surgeon, who was actually in our unit for a second opinion as a patient. And, you know, there's not much going on in the hospital over the holidays, and I think he, out of boredom perhaps as much as anything, he decided to wrestle the devil for my soul, and he won. quite an amazing character, Dr. Richter. He began by asking, I don't know what clues I gave off, but it was obvious I was a collectivist. And he began by asking me what I thought about my country's bicentennial. And I gave him the classic leftist answer that I was of the opinion that the United States was the center of evil in the world, imperialism, this and that. And he gave me to understand that I had no idea how mistaken I was. And suggested that I read a book called Friedrich Hayek's Road to Serfdom.
Good book.
And I think he knew that I probably wasn't going to go out and buy it, so he intrigued with a nurse to go out and find it at a used bookshop. And he actually found an original first edition English imprint of it.
Nice.
I've lost it over the years. I really hate that, but he said, look, I know you're a fast reader. He says, take this home, read it, and then we'll talk about it. And so I did, and I finished it in about 2 days and came back, and I spent all of my free time in the doctor's room, and we discussed, I mean, literally everything. His own experiences. He had been on the last plane, one of the last planes, certainly, out of the Stalingrad Kessel just before it fell, when they were bringing out the technicians that they knew they couldn't afford to lose. And he got me to understand the absolute tragedy of millions of young men killing each other in the snows of Russia for two sides of the same collectivist coin. Mm-hmm. And that was perhaps the greatest insight he had, because I had always believed that, well, the communists are the natural enemies of the Nazis and the Nazis the communists. And I believed in the whole left-right continuum thing, you know, which is a lie. It's a lie fostered by collectivists in order to justify what they do. And he got me to see that rather than a line, the political continuum was more like a circle, that political systems should be judged by how many bodies they stacked up and by how they treated free men, free markets, and the rule of law. And on the doctor's circle, at the apex of the circle, was the American Constitutional Republic. Free men, free markets. And at the bottom, cheek by jowl, were Nazism and communism. And then working their way up the arcs were fascism, socialism, tribalism, racism, you name the collectivism, that functionally collectivism, regardless of what you call it or how you define the collective, that was the ultimate sin against both liberty and God. And
well, Mike, what was... Okay, so that began with him asking you about how you felt about the bicentennial. So after reading Hayek's The Road to Serfdom...
It was a trick question.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was a trick question.
Well, because then how did you feel about it after reading Hayek's? Because even by the 70s, collectivism had seeped its way into the American public and the United States. Did you still recognize that at that point? Or what was your...
Oh, sure.
Did he ask the question again?
Well, I had Dr. Richter for 2 weeks. Then he went back to Germany to die because he had multiple brain tumors. And in that time, he gave me a reading list. He gave me a whole lot to think about. And he got me to see that my education was woefully, woefully... poor, that my public school education had not taught me anything about political economy, about liberty, about my country's own history. So really, for the next almost 10 years more, I really wasn't politically active, but I spent that time reading like a starving man in a granary, you know? Mm-hmm. I just educated
what were some
myself
of the more,
as to what I did not know.
What were the more influential works that you can look back on and say, these were the authors that really blew my mind?
Well, as an ex-communist, and all the best anti-communists are ex-communists, the thing that, we know all the lies. You know, we're taught all the lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the one work that impressed me above all was Whitaker Chambers. And, of course, there was Orwell. You know, these two guys came out of the darkness and into the light at a time when they believed that they were on the losing side of history, that, mm-hmm. that collectivism was going to win, and that the only fate that they could count on for having seen the lies and exposed the lies was probably a mass grave and oblivion, but they did it anyway.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So Witness by Whitaker Chambers was you know, extremely influential to me.
Now, Mike, let me diverge here for a little bit. What are the sort of principle? Is there a first principle? Because for us here at the Fiends, it's really the non-aggression principle, and that's how we smack down collectivism. Is we say, well, individuals own themselves, and it's not legitimate for a collective like the state to initiate aggression against any individual with regards to telling them what they can or can't do, what they can and can't own, i.e., drugs, guns, whatever it is. You know, whatever trade an individual does, it's only up to the individual what he engages ages in. Are you aware of the non-aggression principle, and tell us what you think about it?
Well, yes, certainly. You know, I've read some Spooner, and I've read the libertarian basic works. The one thing I've discovered in life is that
you there, Mike?
No one has a principle that is absolute in terms of reality. Okay.
What do you mean by that? I mean, I kind of feel like if somebody has a principle and they have different uses of it or different interpretations of it for different things, then they're not really principled.
Well, take Rand, for example.
We don't like Rand, by the way. I think you jumped to that, but go ahead with Rand.
Well, Rand got a part of the truth right, okay? But only a part. And it's always important not to check your brain at the door when you read something that seems to be on the face of it absolute. And I include Spooner in that, okay? I include, we live in a real world. For example, is the Constitution flawed? Absolutely. Was it designed to be flawed? Absolutely. But I live now. I live in the United States of America in the 21st century. And right now, as flawed as it was, and I would have been an anti-federalist back in the Founders' generation, the Constitution is the one thing that we can...
We're going to a break here, Mike. We'll have more after the break. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Inoculation from indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. 5 centuries after the first spaceflight, the stars remain beyond humanity's reach. So a mad scientist enlists the aid of a young technician, Nicole Orem, as they travel through the solar system, encountering the hazards of space and human treachery. Quantum Vibe, Volume 1, Nicole, collects the first 400 strips of the epic sci-fi webcomic series, available now from the major online bookstores or direct from bigheadpress.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Quantum Vibe! It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com from Big Head Press.
All right, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. I'm Nima Vidati. We've also got Michael W. Dean.
Hello.
And in addition to us two, we've also got a special guest today, one of the preeminent voices in the fight for liberty and freedom. We have Mike Vandebau. And before the jump, we were talking about the non-aggression principle. And Mike said that, you know, the Constitution... It's flawed, and you know, it might have been intended, you know, with some flaws when it was written. But he said it still could be something that we could all rally around. Is that about right, Mike? And if so, why do you say that?
Sure, I say that because if you want to have principles that are unsullied, you should go live in a cave. I live in the real world. I'm a street fighter for liberty, and I need. In order to accomplish that, I need allies. Now, the collectivists of this country are attacking the Constitution root and branch. That, above all, would indicate to me that I need to defend it. I am not a purist, all right? I think that anyone who is a purist, at the expense of actual liberty, at the expense of actual fighting the collective monster that seeks to devour us all, is trying to keep his skirts clean while he stands in line for the trains.
But isn't the Constitution a collectivist document itself? I mean, it grants the powers to the federal government. It sets up the executive branch and the three branches of government. And, you know, it says they can provide for the general welfare, which is such a broad concept.
Yeah, as much as I hate Obamacare being forced down our throats, I pretty much think there's a possibility that Nancy Pelosi's correct, that it's within the Constitution. I mean, that thing sets up for basically whatever they want to do, man.
The founders would disagree with you violently.
And they should have written it better, I think.
Well, some of them.
Well,
maybe Jefferson, Hamilton.
I'm sorry. You're requiring perfection, perhaps? Liberty is a constant struggle. You know, you put the question to me about, well, didn't we lose it in the Whiskey Rebellion? We have to fight the fights that we have constantly, continually, into the future. This is, it's the true dialectic that humanity is faced with. It is liberty versus collectivism. It is good versus evil, okay? Now, if you think you can do that, and keep your intellectual skirts clean, then get out of the way of people like me who fight on the ground, at street level, where it costs, and we're willing to overlook imperfections and not unknowingly, but simply because we need allies that agree on several basic principles. Right? And at this point in time, the Constitution provides that.
Well, have you
interviewed Oath Keepers?
I haven't, but
Constitution.
I don't think I'm in all your right. way. I'm just asking you questions. I want to know what your plan is. I mean, you talk.
My plan?
Yeah.
As if there's some great overarching plan.
No,
I'm not a collectivist.
Well, you got to consider there's people listening who've never heard of you or us, who are just tuning in on the radio, driving somewhere. You know, tell them your plan. What's your plan?
Well, not a plan, but you said there are battles that need to be fought. You know, that doesn't necessarily necessitate a plan, but you said there's battles that need to be fought, Mike. What are the battles you see that need to be fought?
Our movement has always been organized by events. The Tea Party, for example, the militia movement in the 90s. Our enemies generally provide us with the battles. In fact, they must, because we are who we are. We're not revolutionists. They are the revolutionists.
Yeah.
I'm a restorationist, right? Now, you believe that what I'm trying to restore is worthless. Well, you're welcome to that opinion.
We didn't say that.
Well,
I just wonder about,
I
like,
mean, that's the general thrust of what you're saying.
You know, it sounds like you're saying you want to go back to a time when America was good, but I don't know that it was good because the Whiskey Rebellion was 12 years, after the signing of the Declaration, and they went and shot at Americans for not paying taxes. We'll have more after the break here with Mike Vandebau on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. That's BADQUAKER.com.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
All right, we are back on Freedom Fiends Live. It is our Sunday show for June 30th. It's me, Nima Vidati. We've also got Michael W. Dean and special guest Mike Vandebo. How you doing, Mike?
I'm still here.
That's good. So in our last segment, we were talking about the Constitution, and where we seem to be at right now is you're wondering, okay, fine, what would you have as an alternative? What would you replace the Constitution with? And I guess it reminds me of this Lysander Spooner quote, which I believe you're familiar with, where Spooner says, quote, "Whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such a government as we have had or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist." Now, and here's my other thought is, let's be a little bit more specific if we can. Is it the whole Constitution you think is necessary as a rallying point? Or could we even narrow that down to just say the Bill of Rights? Because the Bill of Rights does nothing but restrict what a government can or can't do rather than creating the structure of it like the rest of the Constitution does.
Good question. Certainly, the Bill of Rights is something that literally everyone ought to be able to agree on. And I suppose when I refer to the Constitution, it's the Bill of Rights I'm thinking of. And surely they could not have gotten the Constitution without providing us the Bill of Rights. The whole experiment would have fallen apart at that point. Would have been interesting historically as an alternative to see what might have happened. But what might have happened didn't happen. And Spooner was writing at a particular point in history, and I certainly understand his critique, but I live in the 21st century, and I'm trying to beat back various and sundry threats to liberty, such as you know, citizen disarmament and, you know, the health care bill, Patriot Act, and this whole concept of, you know, decapitation as an extension of state policy drones and things like that. All right, the constant spying that is going on, and in this time, in this milieu, you need allies in order to achieve those things. You need to agree on some basic things, and the Bill of Rights is an excellent place to start. And I think everyone. The oath keepers certainly believe when they take an oath to the Constitution, it's the Bill of Rights they're thinking of. I mean, you know, who appoints or elects a senator is immaterial. It's right. The Bill of Rights that is the core. And
do you think the movement needs a change in in rhetoric then to make that more obvious that really what we're going for is preserving rights of the people, i.e. the Bill of Rights, which every point in the Bill of Rights basically states Congress or i.e. the state cannot restrict this or Congress cannot restrict that. Do you think that that would be an important distinction to make in the rhetorical battle?
I think most Americans that do any thinking at all understand that intuitively. You know, the people are not stupid. I get up into the mountains of North Alabama often, and the folks up there may not be as sophisticated as some would like, but they understand exactly and precisely what the stakes are, what they're fighting for, what they believe in, what they're living for, and they intend not to be messed with. And if we can tap into that and show people that that we do have all of these various things in common. I mean, there are, strange as it may seem, it almost seems an oxymoron, but there are intellectually honest liberals. And they get the part about the Patriot Act, except some of them fall by the wayside when they think it's their side that's enforcing the Patriot Act, and they're cool with that. You know, they're very fine with the IRS investigating Tea Parties. You know, but the intellectually honest ones will say, no, that's wrong. Right? Well,
right.
So that's an issue that we can get together with. If you take Fast and Furious, for example. You know, we never would have exposed that without the help of ATF agents who did not believe as we did. They knew that we didn't believe the ATF had a constitutional right to exist, and yet they understood that if they were going to stay alive, let alone succeed in their own conflicts with the agency, they needed allies. They needed allies that understood their enemies within the agency, and that turned out to be us. And that's how we ended up with the Fast and Furious story.
Okay,
and which,
Mike.
By
so
the way,
if rallying
absolutely
around the,
well,
go ahead,
one moment.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Which Fast and Furious did several things. Number one, for 2 years. The Justice Department and the ATF were rocked back on their heels and were not, you know, carrying out the usual depredations of liberty against the people because they were defending themselves against, you know, what the law-breaking that had been exposed on their part. So we bought 2 years with that scandal, first of all. Secondly, it also enabled us to reach out to government employees to show them that, hey, you know, these guys had been right all along about the lies and about overweening federal power. And so you know, in that sense, you know, your fights are handed to you by the enemy, and you take them and run with them and bless your enemy for being both arrogant and stupid.
All right. Well, so it sounds like, in the sense, what you're saying is the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, pointing to it, is sort of a means to an end. It's a way to communicate and build allies. What's the end, in your opinion, Mike? What are you working towards?
You know, the old saying, it's hard to recall that when you're up to your ass in alligators, that your original intention was to drain the swamp. I don't know that I have an end view. I'm a soldier for liberty. I didn't want to be necessarily. It just it got thrust upon me. And when you're stuck with the duty, you do it. I don't know that I have confidence that we'll win this fight. In fact, I'm quite sure that it could go against us. You know, republics have a finite life, and we're certainly, you know, getting toward the end of that. It would be something that has not yet been successfully done in history to revive a republic that is so far down the road of corruption. My fear, of course, is that we will go the way of the rest of the world, and we'll go through another cycle of tyranny, blood, and all that attends the fall of republics, because our people no longer love liberty. I think it was Adams that said that the Constitution was designed for a moral people, and it would last as long as the people were moral. Well, they're not. And so I don't know that that we can win this. I only know that, you know, my belief is that my God commands me to stand for those principles that, that I understand are His. And I will be here as long as God has a use for me, and you know, when He doesn't, He'll call me home. I wish I could be more positive, but you know, this is a fight that we didn't ask for. It's a fight that we were born into. It's a time that we were presented with, and we've got to fight the battles that are presented to us. Because only then can we claim to be free men. Or let me rephrase that. Only then will we be the free men we claim to be.
There you go. Yeah. That's all very true. And, you know, revolutions often don't end in the freedom that the fighters were intending them to. I'm thinking of an example in my personal life. Yeah, never. Yeah, exactly. You can't
point to
a good example. My father was born in Iran, and he left, and the Islamic Revolution happened. Now, it wasn't intended by many of the people fighting for it to be an Islamic revolution. They just wanted to kick the Shah out and be free men again. But once they kicked the Shah out, they ended up with a worse tyranny than what they were fighting against. And like you've pointed to, history, those are the only examples of the ends of revolution. And that's why, for me and Michael, the idea is to it's an intellectual battle. It's getting people to be those moral people that you say is necessary for a free society. Now, I think we have differences in strategies. Our strategy is to educate people about the basic principles that lead to morality, and we take a different tact than the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. But I guess in the end, it's all about convincing people rather than fighting the current state directly. Whereas, do you intend to take some fights to the state directly? I know there was some civil disobedience in Colorado you were thinking about. Can you explain what's going on there for a little bit?
Well, I've already gone to Connecticut and broken their magazine law by smuggling in magazines. I gave a speech on the State House steps in Hartford. If anybody wants to see that speech, they can go to my website. There's links there. But although the federal laws have been checked temporarily, they have made the collectivists have made inroads in the states. So we have to take these fights as they are, and that's in the states. Colorado is one of them.
Yep, and we'll go ahead and discuss what's going on there right after we take this quick trip to the market. Go ahead and hold the line for us, Mike. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the central scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
All right, thanks for sticking with us here on Freedom Fiends Live. It is our live Sunday show. I'm Nima Vedati. We've also got Michael W. Dean. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm excellent. Excellent. Having fun.
Excellent. Yes, yes. We're having fun with Mike Vandebo. And we've gone through sort of the philosophical, the strategic. And now I guess let's get a little bit more to the tactical. Mike, Colorado has stepped all over the right to keep and bear arms with a ban on what I would call standard capacity magazines. And there is apparently some civil disobedience being planned even among Coloradoans, but you were going to go and lend a hand to that battle. Is that right, or are the plans changing? I guess, what's your stance in Colorado, and do you have any plans?
Well, I was going to be out there this coming week and help them with their civil disobedience. I have had some health issues, though. I need to go in and have some surgery attempted to fix something that was not done well a year ago. So I've decided to postpone my trip out to Colorado until after that. But my understanding is that the law will be broken immediately by Coloradans on the 1st of July. And there'll be other events that happen throughout that week, including the 4th of July. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. I think it will be interesting to see how the state authorities react. Very interested to see how the state authorities react. So we'll find out. You know, are they willing to put their own citizens in jail for? I mean, they created these criminals. Okay, I mean that's the whole thing. I mean, these are formerly law-abiding folks, but they've made them into criminals. Are they willing to deal with the unintended consequences of that? Perhaps even to them. You know, we'll find out.
Well, there's also some people actually involved in the state government of Colorado, sheriffs and whatnot, saying that they think a lot of these new gun control regulations are unenforceable and they don't plan on enforcing them. Is there some Oath Keeper or even 3%er influence that you can point to in the state of Colorado?
Oh, there's lots of 3%ers in Colorado, and there's even more Oath Keepers in Colorado. The interesting thing will be, how do the sheriffs negotiate not enforcing the law? You know, they can be removed from office if they don't enforce the law, if they engage in nullification. And this is something that we perfectly expect that the collectivist enemies will go after them for. You know, so it could get very, very interesting. Very, very, and I use that in the sense of the Chinese curse. You know, may you live an interesting time.
Right, and it seems like it has implications. It seems like it has implications that are broader than just Colorado, too. What kind of ripple effect do you think this could have to the positive or the negative, as far as what goes on in Colorado? How important do you think it is that we keep our eye on what actually happens, you know, with this?
Well, I think it's absolutely important. I think. You know, it's certainly possible that somebody could end up getting killed over this. You know, when you pass these ridiculous laws, you put their enforcement in the hands of people who, you know, some of the anecdotal evidence shows that our so-called law enforcement officers these days are not very well connected to the Constitution or even to the law that they claim to enforce. So, we'll see. I mean, if somebody gets stupid, we could have a shot. And that won't be the last shot.
Right. And we'll get much more into that starting in the second hour of Freedom Fiends. We're going to ask a few tough questions, and we'll go ahead and stay on that same concept that you just mentioned. So go ahead and stick with us, Freedom Fiends. We are going to take a trip to the market, and we'll have plenty more good radio for you coming up.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
All right, this is Freedom Fiends Live. It is hour two of our Sunday show, June 30th. I'm Nima Vidotti. We've also got Mr. Michael W. Dean.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Michael W. Dean?
I'm broadcasting from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America.
Woot woot. Sounds good.
I'm in Wyoming.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. The short answer suffice. All right. So we've also got another special guest, Mike Vandebo. And I think you're in Alabama. Is that still correct, Mike?
Mike?
Do we got you there?
Hello? Well, we'll try to get Mike back.
All right. Yeah. What I usually do is caller. Are you there, caller? If you can hear me, I cannot hear you. All right, caller. You can.
I'm going to try to call him back here.
All right.
Okay. Sounds good.
So, Nima.
Yeah, you didn't get much of a word in edgewise, did you, Michael?
No, I'm talking about punk rock on the chat room with the chatters because you're doing such a good job. Being a former television journalist who interviewed people all day, every day, and you left that job. Why did you leave that job?
Man, I was sick of, quote, being on brand, as they call it.
The state because, brand?
You know, it's hard to tell where the brand comes from. It's a chicken or egg kind of thing because people want their state loving news, and so TV stations give that to them.
Yeah, it's probably not some vast grand conspiracy. I think a lot of things that look like vast grand conspiracies are, what would you say they are? Like the result of demand more than anything. People want statism, so they get statism. And we believe that when people want liberty, they will get liberty. And
Mike's
we don't mean it like a magical thing, like it'll just happen. But, hey, Mike, you back there?
Yeah. I was starting to think you guys didn't love me anymore.
No, man, this is good radio. We're having a good time. And, you know, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I've I've given material support to you, which, you know, you weren't yet an enemy of the state, apparently. An enemy of the SPLC doesn't necessarily mean an enemy of the state. I sent you a computer once, so I helped you out with something. I like you. We have some fundamental disagreements, but, you know, we like guns and we like liberty. So, Nima, what's your next question?
Well, in the last segment, we were talking about Colorado, and we were all agreeing pretty much that it's going to be very interesting to watch. And Mike brought up the point that, hey, you know, it could get dangerous. There could be some shots fired and maybe more shots fired after that. So I guess my next question for Mike is, you know, given what we already know and what both of us have already stated, that violent revolutions, there's no good historical examples of that ending well or with more liberty or with more freedom. So, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. And what does some kind of neo-American revolution look like, do you think, Mike?
Well, if you want to know what a neo-American revolution looks like, look what the collectivists are doing to our country now. Like I said, I'm a restorationist. But the fact of the matter is that the doctrine that you mentioned earlier of not imposing your will on other people allows you to use the non-aggression principle, does not preclude violence used in self-defense or in defense of others.
Right.
And I extend that to the defense of liberty as well. But I also know that the founders may have given us a flawed constitution, but they gave us an excellent roadmap into how to stand up for their rights as Englishmen under the English Constitution. And we can do the same under our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And, you know, one of the first things is no Fort Sumters. We don't take the first shot. You know, the collectivist revolutionists that are attempting to overthrow the Founders Republic have to take the first shot, the second shot, and the third shot.
Doesn't that lead to a thousand Ruby Ridges, though?
Oh, no, it won't go that long. As I wrote a letter to Eric Holder a few years ago when he was thinking about raiding a friend of mine's house, there are no more free Wacos. They had their free Waco in the 90s. To think, as some of them did, that they could get away with doing another Waco now, not going to happen. We're in the generation of, or we're in the time of fourth generation warfare here. Fourth generation warfare targets the decision making of the war makers. So, if I were them, I would be very, very careful to think that they could get away with another single Ruby Ridge or another single Waco without there being blowback on them of the most direct sort.
Don't you think they do constantly anyways? I mean, kicking in doors of people for having pot and shooting them. I mean, that happens all the time. Kicking in the wrong door and shooting some military vet in Pennsylvania when he's trying to defend his home because he doesn't even know it's the government coming through the door. I mean, aren't there dozens of examples of that happens all the time anyway?
There were plenty of examples in the founders' generation too, the Boston Massacre, for example, okay? But none of these evinced the direct policy of the national government.
See, I don't think they're going to get you at your home or anyone at their home where they're armed. I think they're going to pull you over on the way back from the dentist or the doctor, you know, and take the key, handcuff you and take the keys out of your pocket. I don't think they're going to go for the allowance of a Ruby Ridge. And if they do, they're going to call in drones probably. I mean, I just wonder if that's a game changer.
Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that, because we have our own precision-guided munitions. They're called rifle bullets, fired at range against targets that are specific. No collateral damage, no Oklahoma cities, just fourth-generation warfare posits that you target the will of your enemy's leadership to resist. And if that means, hypothetically, putting bullets in the heads of White House aides or senators, we know that they're willing to fight to the last ATF agent, to the last FBI agent. Are they willing to fight? And this is the war that that they are risking. Are they willing to fight to the first congressman, to the second senator, to the third media talking head, to the fourth White House aide, you know, to the fifth intellectual supporter of collective terror? You know, that's the question they need to ask themselves when they look in the mirror. I mean, that's the whole thrust of my work over the last 20 years has been trying to prevent a civil war, has been trying to get people to understand that one is possible, and that it will have consequences to everyone. You know, collectivists are nothing but appetites. They have appetites for your liberty. They have appetite for your property. And if necessary, they have appetite for your lives. And so what we need to get them to understand is that we're off the menu. Because if they don't consider us off the menu, then they're not going to be eating anymore. That's what this all boils down to. When you distill the whole thing down, all right, legitimate self-defense, after we've absorbed the first blows, legitimate self-defense is going to look far uglier to the people who order the drones than it will be to the average citizen. Trust me.
Why do you think that is, though? I mean, if the state is good at anything, it's mass murder. You don't think that they would then just up the ante and keep upping it until all of the supporters of liberty were wiped off the face of the earth?
Good luck with that. We got them surrounded. Look at the numbers, number one. Number two, they've played around with green zones in places like Iraq. They've never tried to prosecute a modern war of conquest on their own territory, athwart their own lines of supply, you know, where they live, right? These people who blithely say, well, we ought to do away with the Second Amendment, or, you know, the government will do this, the government will do that. Wait and see how many friends the quote-unquote government has, and government's made of people, when this thing comes down. All right? There are far too many of us, and their surveillance state founders on the one thing that they cannot process, the information that they collect. They don't have enough analysts to catch us all. And in the meantime, their system will be being degraded by the deaths of the people who are trying to carry it out. So it's absolutely a bloody horror on both sides. So they should not go down this road. But we, you know, it's not us that's pushing this. Okay, all we want is to be left alone. They're the ones with the appetites. So they need to curb their appetites or have their teeth bashed in. They won't be eating anymore.
Okay. Well, we're about here to wrap up this final segment here, Mike. First, is there anything else you'd like to let everybody know? And after you go ahead and do that, let people know how they can find out more about you, read your blog, or get in contact with you if they want to help you out.
Sure. If I have one thought, it's this. If you believe that you're a free man or a free woman, act like it. If you believe that liberty is a good thing, then seize it. Defend it. Don't complain about it. Don't overanalyze it. Fight your fight, however, with whatever tools that God has given you, in whatever place that you have. And I'm not talking about violence, necessarily. 99% of it certainly isn't. But take your own destiny in your own hands. If you get across to the people who are trying to steal your liberty and your property and your life, that it will cost them something for the exchange, they'll leave you alone because they don't want to go down that road. So if you're free, act like it. Now, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can go to... my blog, which is called Sipsey Street Irregulars, S-I-P-S-E-Y, Street Irregulars, at blogspot.com. They can email me at georgemason1776@aol.com.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it greatly.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Yeah. It's the Freedom Fiends. It is our live Sunday show. Right now, it's just me, Nima Vidotti. Just me. And Michael W. Dean, too. Yeah, just him.
Hello.
No more Mike Vandebo. Although that was a great interview. I thought I enjoyed it thoroughly. There was some definitely good radio segments there
that
I enjoyed hearing. Yeah.
We had a lot more questions. I mean, really, it could have been longer, but I think it got everything. You know, it's a good introduction to Mike, and you can go to his website, his blog, which is Sipsey Street Irregulars. Let me read that. It's a long word. It's S-I-P-S-E-Y Street I-R-R-E-G-U-L-A-R-S Sipsey Street Irregulars .blogspot.com. If you just search Sipsey Street Irregulars, even close to spelling it right on Google, it will take you right to it. That's how I always find it. It's a very popular blog. And
It is. Yeah, even though it's kind of old school in its formatting, it's just a real basic
blog. But it works, man.
Spot.
It works, you know. It works. I mean, there's a lot of websites that I look at that are really fancy and modern. It's like, I can't find the information. His is really well organized. You know, over on the right, it's got kind of his frequently asked questions and a link to donate cash or ammo and explanation of the Gunwalker scandal, Project Gunwalker Scandal Resources, Volume 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. It's got the Doctrine of the Three Percenters. I would say this is a much better laid out resource than many things on the internet. And then he regularly updates it with very feisty posts over on the left side. So, yep.
Yeah. But you wanted to take us in a little bit of a different direction right now. Is that right? You sent me this story. The headline is Slain Woman's Family Alleges.
There was one thing I wanted to ask Mike that we didn't get around to. The left loves to hate him. I mean, they really, really, really love to hate him. And the collectivist, lefty heroes like Bill Clinton really love to hate him. And, you know, I'm sure Eric Holder probably reads Mike's blog every morning, and that's barely an exaggeration. I mean, if he doesn't, I'm sure someone in his office does to see what he's saying about him. There's a really common straw man argument lobbed against Mike, which I think is just bull crap. And it's basically, they criticize, this is like everyone I've ever seen criticize him says, oh, he hates the government, but he's on Social Security and doesn't mind taking their money. That is just bullcrap, because you don't have a choice to pay into Social Security. I mean, it's not welfare in the sense of signing up for welfare. It's like you got robbed at gunpoint every day of your life you worked, and then when you reach retirement age, you can get some of that back. I would do it in a heartbeat, man. I don't see the problem with it. I really don't.
Yep. Taking your stolen money back is not morally wrong at all.
Yeah.
And if it ends up being slightly more than you paid into it, hey, think about all the value the dollar's lost. So you just call it interest, man. You just call it keeping up with inflation, even though it doesn't even come close to doing that.
It doesn't come close. No. Gold, silver, brass, and lead keep up with inflation, basically. Yep.
Metals. Yeah, not paper.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, I had another thing to talk about. It was completely off the subject, but it was in our show notes. There's an article Slain woman's family alleges AA meetings point financial, sexual, and violent predators to victims. Some lady who died allegedly killed by someone she met at an AA meeting. The family is suing Alcoholics Anonymous. This is one of the most ridiculous lawsuits, if not the most I've ever heard. You know, a lot of people point to the woman who got burned by the coffee with McDonald's as a ridiculous lawsuit, that, you know, a nuisance lawsuit. And if you look at the facts in that case, it really wasn't. It was like the coffee was way hotter than it was supposed to be. They handed it to her. She spilled it. She was really badly burned with third degree burns. And tried to get McDonald's to cover her medical expenses. Cost, right. And they were like, go away, man. You did that. We didn't do that. We, you know, and the fact that they just said, get away from us, you know, then she sued him for a lot of money and ended up getting it. That's not really a nanny lawsuit. That's not really a frivolous lawsuit. There's a frivolous lawsuit award every year given that's named after that woman. It's the whatever her first name is award, which is really
but we nominate this AA lawsuit for that, because trying to sue the organization, which it's a real decentralized organization. Yeah. I don't know
people
how
tried.
That's going to work out.
It's not going to work. People have tried many times, and AA was set up by, you know, recently sober lawyers in 1935. Actually, they may have sobered up some lawyers to help make the corporate structure of that nonprofit. They certainly sobered up a newspaper man to help edit their book. So we'll have more on this lawsuit, the anti-AA nanny lawsuit, when we get back from the market.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
Yeah. All right. It's the Freedom Fiends live. It is Sunday. I'm Nima Vadati. Who are you?
I am Michael W. Dean. Please say the whole thing of the Freedom Fiends. That's my name. My full name is Michael W. Dean. Please say the whole thing. That's my name. Yes. That's on my business cards. That's what it'll say.
And the Michael, not Mike, you get really upset when people call you Mike. I guess that really worked to our advantage here during our last few segments of the show.
Yeah.
Because we did have a Mike. We had a Mike Vanderbo.
And it worked. It worked. Yeah. And I have a... what it was when I had when I was a kid, I had a cousin that I played with a lot whose name was also Michael, but he went by Mike. And my mother was actually clear on calling me Michael and him Mike, probably because she felt Mike was like a vulgar, you know, working class name. And they were working class and came up from like dirt farmers and then actually did pretty well later. But they really, my mother was really into kind of getting away from her humble roots, you know, like she joined all the ladies society clubs and with a lot of rich people, and we weren't rich, but you know, she tried to bring herself up in a, you know, kind of tea, like put your pinky up when you sip the tea kind of way, you know, like a Brunelli shotgun kind of way.
you have to throw shots at the board ops, don't you?
Yeah.
Nobody kind of gets
that. He said, I got a Benelli shotgun. I was like, ooh, gonna do some
too good for Mossberg,
gonna do some pheasant hunting with Dick Cheney. Ooh. No, I'm just, any gun's good, man. And but you know, but if I had a Benelli, I'd sell it and get like 15 Mosin Nagants probably. and a you know, Taka and some little handgun, some little cheap handgun. Yeah, sidearm. So anyway, but yeah, he was Mike. I was Michael to keep us apart. And ever since then, I've kind of been, didn't like it when people took the liberty of calling me, you know, like, hey, I'm Michael Dean. What's your name? Oh, I'm Tom. Hey, Mike, how you doing? I'm like, Michael, it's not Mike. My username somewhere on the internet was actually Michael, not Mike. And people would come on and be like, hey, Mike, what's up? They didn't get it. But the way I would tell people, and they'd usually remember it after this, it was pretty, pretty hoity toity of me, but I would say, Michael was the angel that threw Lucifer out of heaven. Mike is the guy who checks your oil at the gas station. And they'd usually remember it after that. But no, man, it's Michael. Mike, it's all good. I don't really answer to Mike. It's not really my name. I've never internalized it as my name. But going back to the Social Security thing before we get to the AA thing, DJ told me something great during the break. Her grandparents had done pretty well for themselves working their whole lives. So, and they got Social Security anyway, because they give it to you whether you need it or not, because they took it and the government knows what's best for everybody. So they gave DJ their Social Security money for 2 years and let her go to paralegal school. So, and the reason they did that was they said, your generation is going to be paying for this, so we're going to give it to you.
That's very thoughtful of them, isn't it?
Yeah,
a lot of people don't think that way.
Forward thinking for back then. A lot of people think that now, but nobody really did the math on the pyramid scheme back then as much as they do now. So yeah.
Well, although, you know, it wasn't always the most popular thing. I can remember a country song. I think it might be Merle Haggard or somebody, one of his ilk, that had a song where he said, basically, you can take your so-called Social Security. And I loved that so-called because, yeah, it's neither social and nor does it provide any real security.
Yeah, he also did that song Okie from Muskogee, which goes, we don't take no trips on marijuana. We don't smoke no, don't smoke no LSD.
We Although still some people have theorized that it was tongue-in-cheek, that it was kind of supposed to be a spoof, but then it got so popular.
It got taken by, it was it was a battle cry for people who like to watch Dragnet and get aroused while they beat up hippies. You know, I actually saw Dragnet last night. It was the first one. Okay, Dragnet, it's part 8 in our ongoing old cop show series, but it has stuff to do with how we got to where we are today. Dragnet was a radio show in the 50s, was a black and white TV show in the late 50s, early 60s. Then it went away for a couple of years. Then it came back in 1967 in color and it was a little more spiffed up and energetic and kind of made the template for modern cop shows. But the first one, it was Dragnet 1967 was the name of the series. And it says that at the front on the badge. The first episode of it was about LSD, like 2 days before it got outlawed, and our heroic cops are dealing with all these horrible broken hippies who are harming themselves on LSD and saying, I wish we had a law to protect them from this. And one of them, there's a guy who's like tripping and, you know, licking the bark on a tree or something, and they can't arrest him for LSD yet. So they arrest him for the statute in California, which is a real thing back then, of like living an indolent life, which was an anti-bum law. And I'm thinking, like, that's probably still on the books. Why aren't the cops just arresting every other Californian? Because every other Californian lives an indolent life.
There you go. Indolent life. Is that still on the books?
I don't know, man. Indolent means lazy and unwilling to work. Yeah. I do know that.
Wow.
Living an indolent life.
That can be a crime, apparently. How collectivist is that, right? If you're not producing for the state, then you're wrecking the Soviet economy.
Some towns used to have anti-bum laws where they could throw you in jail if you didn't have a dollar and a comb in your pocket.
Nowadays, they just take your dollar and your comb, civil forfeiture,
and throw you into jail for living living an indolent life and not having a dollar and a comb.
You were going to use that dollar to buy a crack pipe and a comb to crush up the rocks. Shame.
Drug paraphernalia. Yeah. So anyway, back to AA. Speaking of there is a solution to all this mess that doesn't involve the state. There is a solution to addiction and drug abuse and alcoholism that doesn't involve the state, and it's AA. And I used to be a member. I'm not now. I'm still sober, and I'm not violating any tradition of anonymity because I am no longer a member. So basically, the tradition of anonymity exists so you don't have first of all, because egos get in the way of recovery. And second of all, because they don't want people saying, yes, I'm sober now thanks to AA, like movie stars and rock stars. And then they relapse really publicly and horribly. And then people go, oh, AA or NA, that doesn't work. That guy, it didn't work for him. So basically, you're supposed to be anonymous about it, but I'm not a member anymore and I don't go to meetings anymore. So I can talk about it. And you've read the books, you've researched them, and we've talked about them a lot as a probably one of the longest running examples of voluntary association working with one person helping another as a systematic organization, which actually the founder of AA called in the 50s a synergy of democracy and anarchy. And anarchy was a dirty word then, and he actually used it correctly. And it's a voluntary democracy where you can leave when you want, and there is some peaceful anarchy in the structure of it. So the government, somebody's trying to sue AA because they failed at it and they're not a good judge of people. And, you know, they say in AA, we don't come here because we're healthy. You know, there's a lot of broken people in AA, but they're going there trying to get better and it works. So what do you think of this lawsuit? And do you think Obamacare will take over AA because of this, if the person wins the lawsuit?
Well, it looks like the suit is actually filed by parents of a woman who was allegedly killed by a fellow participant. So they're trying to say because the victim met the attacker at an AA meeting that somehow AA is to blame.
If she met him at a bar, could you sue the bar?
I know, right? If she met him at Walmart, or if somebody gets hurt from somebody they met anywhere.
In the lobby of the police station, could you? I'm sure that's happened. You know, someone's met someone in the lobby of a police station, gone on dates with them, got raped and murdered. Can you sue the police for that?
Right, right. And you know, I guess my thing is bad stuff happens, and why sit there and throw blame on everybody just to make yourself feel better where no blame or violations of the non-aggression principle exist? And from what I understand about AA meetings is, you know, it's all voluntary. People come in or they leave, but they are sort of self-regulating in the sense that if they do sense a predator, if they sense some guy coming in who's disingenuous and is trying to prey on the women or a woman trying to prey on the men, they'll set them aside and have a few talks with them, try to say, hey, you know, this is, we understand that you're sick, we're all sick, we'll try to help you get better, but you can't come in here and use this as a candy jar or a honeypot to get your rocks off.
And you know, generally they don't even need to do that, and shunning deals with it. Like, I've seen people who are predators in 12-step meetings, you know, either sexually or financially. And basically what happens is if they want to keep coming to the meetings, they do. But when a newcomer comes in at the break, someone walks over to him and says, watch out for that guy. He does blank, blank, blank. There's no need for even like any kind of law or throwing them out. And eventually either they get sober and they get, or if they're sober already, they get less sick and stop doing that. Or they don't go there anymore. If that's the only reason they're going there, they can't get what they're looking for because everyone has marked them as a, you know, someone who looks for marks, and they go elsewhere. It is the market, man.
Right. The scary thing, though, I think, as you've pointed out previously, is the worry that the government could step in and say, well, we can't have these unregulated 12-step programs. We're going to need to have them be licensed or whatever the case is whenever the
monitored.
State gets involved. Monitored.
Yeah, and they probably
way.
Could try to do that because they could say it's a medical treatment, which it is not. Absolutely. There's no, you know, chemicals given or drugs given, and it's
I'm sure they would say at AA it's psychology. That it's more of a spiritual treatment.
Yeah. No, they probably say it's psychology. But yeah, man, government should stay the hell out. You know, actually, there's a thing in the NA meeting, in the NA, when they're starting a meeting, there's a thing in the reading that says our meetings are under no surveillance. And the reason they have that in is because when AA started in the 30s and it worked. So addicts tried to get sober in it and got thrown out because at AA, you know, drunks were like, we don't want you addicts here. We're better than you. So that with permission, they started NA in the 50s. And cops used to go to NA meetings, like infiltrate them and watch them from the street and see who's in them and try to bust the people. And there's a guy named Frank Brennan I used to know who was an AA guy and an NA guy. He died at like age 85 about 10 years ago, and he was fine with people using his name, and he's dead now, so it's okay because he was fine with it to use his full name. He went to J. Edgar Hoover and said, these things work, stop busting these people. And J. Edgar Hoover actually took it to heart, believe it or not, man. And that's the story, and everyone in San Francisco, AA and NA knows that story and remembers Frank as the sweet old man that always wore a suit to meetings and had a carnation on his lapel all the time. He's a cool guy.
All right. Fair enough. But yeah, state, shut up. Shut up, state.
I actually saw a dragnet where where Friday, Sergeant Friday, was going to extension classes like community college at night, one night a week. And there was this kind of rap with me, relate with me class. And there was a guy who had some weed, and he saw the weed and he busted him after the class. And then the professor got really mad and voted him out of the meeting. And then he came back and said, I want to make a speech and have another vote. And he got voted back in because he talked about how important cops are. It's horrible, man.
Oh, man.
You got to watch some Dragnet, man.
That makes me cry a little bit. No, yeah. I don't. I never want to expose my eyes to that horror. And we'll be back so you can expose your ears to the pleasure of the fiends.
Tweak and review.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Tasing you with liberty since 2011.
All right, guys, I get it.
Love the fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Tweak, 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 tweak. Tweak, tweak, tweak.
Tweak. Tweak and review.
Tweak, tweak, tweak. Yes, it is the Freedom Fiends live. Tweak. I am Nima Vidati. That's Michael W. Dean, our fellow tweaker. But we've got the Fiends Tweak and Review coming up. In fact, right now.
Now.
So we'll get started with it. We interviewed
Tweak
Mike
it, brother. Tweak
Vandebo, he called it. Mike Vandebo. We interviewed him. You know, he helped break the Fast and Furious story. Eric Holder is no fan of Mike Vandebo.
Although Eric Holder reads everything Mike writes, which is kind of like being a fan, but
or not. Has a lackey do it. I'm sure Eric Holder never gets his hands dirty.
Gives him a white paper every morning analyzing what Mike has written during the night.
Right, right. Yeah. And the sign of a good person in a lot of respects, Vandebo is also on the hit list of the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah.
And so we talked to him a little bit. There were some points of contention, i.e., Vandebo still believes in the Constitution. But I did whittle it down to where it's really the Bill of Rights, not necessarily the parts of the Constitution that set up the tyrannical government that we have today. You know, all those things of creating the executive branch to lord it over us and saying that they can provide for the general welfare, levy taxes, raise armies, all that
and
kind of horrible stuff.
We agree with Mike on a lot of things. I mean, he likes guns. We like guns. You know, we would shoot to defend our house against, you know, invading horrible people trying to kill us or eat us or take our kids or whatever or our stuff in self-defense. You know, if people point weapons at us. We want to be left alone. He wants to be left alone. He's just a little more feisty about it than us, I guess. Maybe we'd be sheep to him if we really asked him. I don't know. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he sounds very forged in steel, lying in the sand. And we I don't know, man. We just what's different?
Well, I think it's a strategic thing. I don't think the Bill of Rights necessarily, it could be a rallying point, but I think there's a better one. I think if the end goal is to convince people that liberty and individualism versus tyranny and collectivism is the way to go, then we have to really break down the minarchist mindset. You know, I think a minarchist can almost be more dangerous than a socialist because the full-on balls-to-the-wall socialists, they're going to further the collapse of the state because they're going to keep piling on all the state regulations, all the taxes, and the state will eventually collapse itself. It'll end its own career. We
like,
won't have
like
to sit
Russia
there and
did.
Diss it.
Like the Soviet Union
yeah,
did.
Yeah, like the Soviet Union did. And so, whereas Vandebo calls himself a restorationist, I would probably call myself a futurist. I think that we can get outside of the cycle, and that was another point of discussion we made is, you know, the violent revolutions, they don't end well. There's no historical example of them leading to more freedom and less
tyranny.
For
very long. I mean, maybe for 5 or 10 years, like the United States, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could maybe make that argument. But I think in order to break the cycle, we need to stop looking to any kind of state structure or top-down structure and look at horizontal structures. And I think there's enough information out there now. There's been enough theoretical work done on this to where it can be our job, you know, like the Fiend's job or Ben Stone's job, to just take those concepts, run with them, help break them down into practical points that we can make to people and win the intellectual battle. You know, one thing Vandebo said is, you know, one of the founders basically said the Constitution was written for a moral people. And when you have that moral decay, you have, I'm paraphrasing here, but when the people cease to be that moral people that can follow the Constitution, then it'll be pointless. And to me, the corollary there is Ben Stone's thing of what we really need to be doing is decreasing the demand for the state, decreasing the demand for violent collectivism, and increasing the demand for individualism and liberty. And I think you can do that without the Constitution. At least that's my take on it. I think all you need is the non-aggression principle. You need to explain it to people with regards to property rights that all flow from self-ownership, like Butler Schaefer does in his book Boundaries of Order,
Mike's,
every day.
Mike's thing is, what if you explain it to people and they say, no, we're going to force this on you anyway?
Right. And that's a
I don't really have an answer for that, but I just think for me, an all-out war is not the answer. And, you know, maybe I will be a meal for the state because I think that. We'll see. Time will tell. On the Freedom Fiends and elsewhere.
I don't think it's the answer to Mike either. But like we discussed, just because it's not the right answer doesn't mean it won't happen. But that's a very scary prospect. And I want to do everything I can to hopefully avoid something as horrible as that. We'll be back next week.
Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. We'll take care.
Word.